Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
And welcome to the X Zone, everyone. I am Rob McConnell, and we're coming to you from our broadcast center and studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. And around the world on the Talkstar Radio Network, Mutual Broadcast Network, iHeartRadio, Zeno Media, and of course, Simul Radio and Simul TV. If you'd like to find out about the programming we have available for you 24/7, 365 on the X-Zone Broadcast Network, visit www.xzbn.net and on Simul TV to watch the X-Zone TV channel, which is channel 21 on Simul TV, www.simultv.com. X-Zone Nation, my guest this hour is Jim Vieira. Did I say that right, Jim?
Vieira. Meredith Vieira.
Okay. Vieira is a stonemason, author, explorer, and host of the History Channel's shows Search for the Lost Giants that aired in 2014, Roanoke, Search for the Lost Colony in 2015, and Return to Roanoke, Search for the Seven in 2016. James is the co-author of Giants on Record with Hugh Newman. Jim has investigated worldwide ancient stone sites, studied global indigenous oral traditions, religious documents, the readings of the great mystic, and the literature of secret societies to form an alternative theory regarding the origins of civilization, a theory almost in perfect alignment with the readings of the famed sleeping prophet, Edgar Cayce. If you'd like to get more information on Jim, his Facebook page is facebook.com/giantsonrecord. And Jim, welcome to the X Zone.
Thanks for having me, Rob. I greatly appreciate it.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Tell us, how did you get involved in this line of fascination?
Yeah, that's a good question. It was a tumble down the rabbit hole that was unintended. Mm-hmm. I'm a stonemason by trade. My brother is also a stonemason, and we're avid hikers and antiquarians and historians, and I always had a fascination with stone structures, mm-hmm. and stuff we would find in the woods here in Massachusetts and New England. Didn't really fit the context that they were colonial. Archaeologists don't really allow for Native American stonework in the past to exist in New England, although other places in the country obviously have Native American stonework. So and, you know, by virtue of investigating that mystery and a lot of the things we found in the woods, I started to read through town and county histories looking for accounts of settlers showing up and identifying Native American stonework that preexisted, which I did, and my mm-hmm. brother did too. But I also started to stumble across these really strange accounts of giant skeletons unearthed by scientists of the time in the 1800s and early 1900s, very well-respected individuals. You know, just it started to catch my attention, the anatomical measurements of a stationary object in an era of inefficient communication, noting the same kind of strange anatomic anomalies like massive jaw bones and double mm-hmm. rows of teeth. So my investigative mind took over, and I spent probably over 10 years investigating, writing the book that me and my co-author Hugh Newman did, and I just fell down the rabbit hole, and here I am.
Well, let me ask you, speaking about giants, what are the North American legends concerning giants?
Oh, that's a good question. The Native Americans have, there's two stories mm-hmm. When you talk about giants around the world too. There are like a benevolent race or individuals who were giant-sized who showed up after the flood to repromulgate civilization. The Viracochas and the beings from the first time who show up in Egypt, and they are the Tuatha De Danann, these mystical beings who show up in the British Isles after the Great Flood. And in the United States, there were benevolent, like a royal class of Native Americans who, you know, organized society. They were the wisdom keepers and the shamans. And in fact, you could see, you know, in my book, we have a chapter on the Native legends. And right up until basically the contact period, all the early explorers encountered absolutely enormous giant chiefs like Tuscaloosa, Alabama, 8 foot tall. And the natives also had legends of a malevolent race portrayed as often cannibalistic, red-haired, especially out in the southwest portion of the country. So virtually every tribe around the country has oral traditions that are steeped in lore about giants and an ancient race and little people, too, if you can believe that. And all the native elders met together in the late 1990s, organized by Vine Deloria, the Lakota Sioux elder, to share the indigenous information about giants and little people that all these native tribes had. So just right there is a huge point of emphasis I would make. It's like all these distant lineages and tribes that have tons of integrity are basically telling, you know, the science fiction story about the past, about giants and little people and great floods. But science is starting to catch up to a lot of these mythical ideas.
So where did these giants go? How come they don't roam the earth today?
Yeah, there's a lot of different theories that atmospheric conditions were different in the past. We had megafauna and mega flora. The Pleistocene era went on, I believe, for about 2 million years, and it ended abruptly with the cataclysm 12,900 years ago. And at the time, it was a really strange era where there was beavers as big as, you know, Volkswagen bugs. There was huge lizards and giant sloths and different kinds of flora and fauna that existed. And then the cataclysm, the Younger Dryas impact events that occurred 12,900 years ago when there was a cometary impact on the ice sheet of North America that abruptly, you know, caused a cataclysm, and we dipped into another 1,200-year mini ice age. You know, the point being that the atmospheric conditions changed. If your audience is familiar with the work of Emanuel Velikovsky, Worlds in Collision, or David Talbot, there's a lot of evidence that atmospheric conditions were different in the past, and actually humans were just always, you know, small prototypes. Like we go back and we think of Lucy 7 million years ago, that in the late Pleistocene, 15, 20, 50,000 years ago, there were purported to be giant humans. And even after the flood, some existed. And I guess to answer your question fully, if you go into Patagonia in the 1500s and 1600s and who the early explorers met, they met would be considered giant people, like sometimes up to 9 feet tall in Mexico. All the early explorers you can name encountered giant humans, and they, all the chronicles wrote about them, De Soto, Coronado, you know, Vespucci. But then again, you know, like 90% of native populations were wiped out by disease and warfare and colonialism.
Besides the oral traditions of the giants, is there any archaeological evidence to substantiate these claims?
There's archaeological evidence, certainly, to substantiate an anthropological mystery that from Patagonia to Virginia to other places around our country, that, like by the Smithsonian's own scientists, for instance, an enormous amount of 7 foot and tall skeletons were unearthed in the burial mounds in the United States, Native American burial mounds, well beyond the normal population's incidence of 7 foot tall individuals. You say, oh, 7 foot, that's not a giant. We got plenty of seven NBA players that are that tall. But there is an anthropological mystery, no question about it, that's been essentially proven, that you just have like a royal class, if you will, that is just vastly more just taller than our normal population now.
But Jim, if the Smithsonian scientists are saying that these giants were found in the mounds, where are the skeletons?
Well, the Smithsonian's own records have, you know, numerous accounts. 1873, 36-inch skull that is measured by Thomas Perrin. All kinds of 7'8", 7'10". Basically, we are told by the Smithsonian that, you know, that I don't really know what I've never got like an official, you know, like these guys didn't know how to measure or work a tape measure or something like that. I think it's just considered a silly idea, a religious idea. It's in their own records. There are anthropological and archaeological heads of institutions that reported absolutely enormous skeletons as well. I just think it's one of those things where it's in the historical record and it's just an idea that's derided and mocked, even though it's right there kind of in plain sight. And the analogy I would make is like the Clovis Barrier, the idea that nobody entered the United States and North America till about 13,000 years ago, which we know now that barrier has been shattered, and it took like 90 years to overturn that dogmatic paradigm.
All right, Jim, yep. We've got to take our first break. Please stand by. ExoNation, Jim Vieira is our special guest this hour. His Facebook page is Giants on Record. And Jim and I will be back on the other side of this commercial break as we continue here in the X-Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. My name is Rob McConnell. Don't go away. Jim Vieira is our special guest this hour, ExoNation, facebook.com/giantsonrecord. Jim, how come there are prehistoric dinosaur bones recreated, you know, put together, and you can actually see the skeletons? You can actually match the skeletal remains with the scientific evidence. How come there is no skeletal remains anywhere of the giants? If, in fact, they did exist.
Yeah. That's a very good question. You know, dinosaurs aren't considered a controversial idea, maybe by some, you know. Mm-hmm. But you know, most people just understand that they roamed the earth and what they were all about. There was this war between science and religion in the late 1800s that, you know, science walked away the victor. And religious ideas like a great flood, giants, and, you know, a lost world, they basically got marginalized, and the idea of the supernatural also, you know, scientific rationalism and the Cartesian model took over, I think, with, you know, to a fault. But the idea of giants has always been considered a religious idea or a, you know, just a an idea that is driven by fanatics or, you know, just myth and legend and fantasy. You know, I would say, you know, if you immerse yourself in the literature and the accounts and the specific nature of them, you know, thousands of them I've read through, things like there's a 9-foot skeleton in Iowa in this town, you know, the doctor wired it together, the town is abuzz, they got a picture of it, there's a newspaper of men there, and I over and over again you hear these stories and it. And then there is nothing to be found for the remains, or they get repatriated. It's a really it's a vexing thing to investigate, that's for sure.
All right, I can understand that. But how come there have been no finds in current time where that could not be done, that the media would be abuzz with it? You know, you'd have scientists clamoring there. The internet would be abuzz. You would not be able to hide the fact that this giant does in fact exist. How come this isn't happening?
You know, there's been finds that are, you know, 7 foot eight in Iraq, 7 foot six in China, on the edge of you know, what's considered normal human range that have been found recently. You know, I would say it's a matter of, you know, wait for the evidence to show up. Don't, you know, talk about some conspiracy. A lot of people dive into that, like, oh, there's this vast conspiracy to cover this up. And it's like, I work with professionals all the time, and I'm like, that's just impossible. You can't cover up, you know, all this stuff around the world, and academics don't, you know, act in concert to like, cover up evidence. You know, I'd say there aren't the excavations that took place when all the explorers showed up in the United States and unearthed all these burial mounds. Those things don't really occur anymore. But to your point, you know, you would assume at some point somebody's going to be, you know, digging into a foundation and unearth an ancient tomb. And you would, you know, I'm not a believer in academic cover-ups for sure. And it's just one of those vexing things about the, you know, the mystery of giants.
You're not a believer of academic cover-ups.
No, I just, well, you know, I work with professionals. I'm friends with archaeologists and anthropologists and biologists. And I just, I believe that science is very, very, very slow to react. When you go to the doctor and your appendix bursts on the table, thank God they could take out your appendix. But I don't, you know, there's not a holistic approach in Western medicine, for instance. They don't tell you to do all these things for a holistic orientation towards your health. And the same thing with the sciences. They don't introduce ideas like, you know, of the mystics or religious documents. Oral traditions from indigenous peoples aren't used as evidence. We've thrown out like 10,000 years of evidence. So there's a non-holistic approach. So science can really ignore large amounts of evidence for like geological cataclysms, great floods, you know, things like that. I don't believe, you know, I believe science is limited in its scope and has a lot of errors, but I don't believe in the, you know, some kind of vast conspiracy though.
Well, then how can we say that if one of the best-selling books in the world talks about giants, and I'm talking about the Bible, you know, the Nephilim, those who, you know, the giants of old who made or laid with the fair maidens of earth, you know, and what about David and Goliath? How do we explain that? How can we say, all right, we believe what the Bible says with no evidence whatsoever, but that's got to be true because it's the Bible, and yet when it comes to the suppression of information, and there are several examples where academia has been flinging the crap to the wall for eons, you know, so I don't trust academia because... You know, let's take a look at who discovered North America. Oh, Christopher Columbus. Wrong. You know, he didn't discover the Americas. The Vikings did. You know, so how can we trust anything that science, history, archaeology, or any of the other so-called sciences tell us when we've caught them lying through their teeth?
No, I agree. You know, I agree. I'm not saying, I guess what I'm saying, it's like, it's just these ideas, these theories just get held on to so intently.
Right.
All I'm saying is like, I don't believe there's like, let's hide evidence for, you know, all this, you know, whatever find we're not really, you know, down with.
So how do we?
But I agree with you, definitely.
How do we explain the fact that there's no evidence that these giants really existed?
That's a good one.
And isn't science based on fact?
It's supposed to be.
So where's the facts? Where's the evidence? Where's the meat?
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm not trying to say that. I just find it's a real conundrum, you know, in investigating this phenomena, because when you read through the records, and it's not just, you know, the great chroniclers like Flavius Josephus, they talk about giant bones. There are all these accounts of the giant of Gabara, 9 foot 9 and 10 foot Chinese guards, and over again, not just bones, but living giants all throughout history. Maximus Thrax, 8'6".
But how do we know that they really did exist if there's no evidence to support the claim? You know, hey, listen, every kid believes that Santa Claus is going to be flying in the sky Christmas Eve delivering them gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all know that's a bit of wishful thinking. But when it, you know, we're just like the Easter Bunny. We know
I know what you're saying. I would say there's certainly evidence for anthropological mystery that is out of the realm of normal. I guess let me throw this out there.
Sure.
There's a new human cousin that's been found called the Denisovans. Mm-hmm. And one of the main arguments against the idea of giants is that, like, there is no way that science could have missed a lost race, let alone a lost race of giants. Now, in 2010 in Siberia, the Denisovans were found, the human cousins who interbred with Neanderthals and humans 40,000 years ago. And the only evidence we have are two teeth that are so large, they thought they were the teeth of cave bears. They took them to the Max Planck Institute and sequenced them and realized that they are a human cousin that mated with us. And the head of evolutionary biology, Svante Paavo, at the Max Planck just wrote a paper where they found a skull fragment that is exceptionally thick. And he is basically saying that the Denisovans, they look like they were of giant stature. We don't know exactly if they were 8-9 feet tall, but they appear to be absolutely enormous, interbred with humans. And there is DNA among populations in Australia, the United States, and South America. So, you know, to that point, which was once considered anthropological heresy, it has now, you know, been substantiated by science that it existed. So, you know, it's a new avenue of investigation.
All right, I agree with you that these teeth were found, the part of the skull was found, but without the rest of the skeleton. Maybe this person just had a big head. Maybe it was a deformity. How can we say with any certainty that this is proof that giants existed? I'm having a problem with this.
They were different individuals, not just one. They weren't. It wasn't any disease conditions. But yeah, you need the long bones, like the femur bones, to indicate height. Mm. It's a good indication. Or it's a good start, you know, with the giant teeth and things like that. I'm not going to say that I've seen the 11-foot skeleton. You know, I haven't. All I could say is that I've seen quite a bit of evidence to indicate that there's a mystery here, that there were populations that were much taller than fits with the out of Africa theory, which is now in its own, just like the Clovis Barry is dead. It's kind of like everybody's rethinking human origins. And I say that... you know, I believe that giants are part of the history of our past. And I'm not going to say, I got a 10-foot skeleton in my basement.
All right. I've got a question for you when we come back from the news. Exo Nation, our guest this hour is Jim Vieira. And if you'd like to find out more about Jim, check him out on Facebook, facebook.com/giantsonrecord.com. This is the X-Zone. I am Rob McConnell, and we'll be back on the other side of this break as we continue from our broadcast center and studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Don't go away.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Thank you.
Jim Vieira is my special guest, Exxon Nation, www.facebook.com/Giants on Record. And Jim is the author, along with Hugh Newman, of Giants on Record. Now, Jim, where can your book be bought?
Amazon.com.
All righty. Jim, before we went to the news, we were talking about the skull fragment that was found in the two teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of seems to support the theory or the hypothesis that giants did exist. Yes?
It does, but it you need the long bones, you need femur bones. I guess, you know, the point I'm making, it's not, you need to believe this. It's more like it's worthy of further investigation.
Sure.
But I feel like the idea of giants is tied up into this idea of the lost world. A lot of these ideas, like giants and little people, the Great Flood, an ancient cataclysm, megalith builders who go back over 10,000 years old. All these things are starting to be verified by science. Hobbits were found in Indonesia in 2003 on the Isle of Flores, three-foot-tall human cousins. Göbekli Tepe in Turkey is about 12,000 years old. A cataclysm occurred. A great flood occurred. And tied into this, you know, the Rosicrucians, Freemasons, Theosophists, Edgar Cayce, Rudolf Steiner, religious documents and oral traditions all around the world talk about giants. They talk about little people. They talk about a lot of these ideas of the lost world. Mm-hmm. So that's why it catches my attention. It's kind of a holistic story that giants seem to be part of. And that not only that, but we have lots of documentation about this. But to your point, show me the 10-foot skeleton, I'm with you.
Yeah.
The case doesn't get solved until you have the remains, no question about it.
Isn't it true, though, that people, as we go back in time, were shorter and smaller than they are today?
That's part of the evolutionary theory that Australopithecines evolved into Homo sapiens.
Right.
And there was some pushback against that idea that evolution, of course, is occurring. You can see it.
Mm-hmm.
But where humans came from is a different matter. And there are some who think humans were genetically engineered. I think Watson from Crick and Watson, after examining the human genome, he said the idea that this is a side effect of evolution is as improbable as a hurricane hitting a dump and creating a 747.
But once again, we don't know everything. You know, we're just on the cusp of trying to understand DNA, genome, quantum mechanics, quantum physics. Like, we're not there yet. So when a scientist says something that like that, where it can't be evolution, how the hell do they know that? They're only basing their statement on facts that are only related on the experience and the knowledge of today. What happens if tomorrow something else is discovered to disqualify that statement?
Absolutely correct. And there's a lot of theories that are just that. They're like, even plate tectonics, there's a lot of geologists who don't think that's the way geology works.
Yeah.
And it's like anthropology and archaeology are educated guesses about the past. It's not incontrovertible science that allows us to have a Skype call or a phone call. It's different, but academics like to paint this broad picture that there's all these incontrovertible theories, and there just isn't. And nobody has a time machine. I guess what I'm saying is I do a comparative analysis of numerous sources, not just modern science, to try to sift through these similar details about the past. And these are the things that jump out, the topics that I've talked about. No, I'm with you. I don't have a lot of faith. There's a lot of ego and agenda in every walk of life, but especially in academia. Nobody wants to say, okay, I accept your new theory after I've been teaching it for 30 years and wrote 7 books about it and have tenure,
Sure. Hence why people are taught today that Christopher Columbus discovered the Americas. What is the connection between giants and the alleged lost continent of Atlantis?
Well, the sources that are rattled off, like the great mystics, Edgar Cayce, Rudolf Steiner, and Madame Blavatsky, they all talk about, and the Rosicrucians and Freemasons, their literature, they talk about Atlantis existing in the middle of the Atlantic. and that a cataclysm destroyed it 13,000 years ago, like Plato told us, and that giants and little people were supposed to be part of the population of Atlantis. So it has this mystical ancient connection. And then you go to these the British Isles, and they have all these myths and legends about, you know, lioness and High Brazil, and they have stories of like giant people coming who they're considered malevolent, or they bring culture, and it's the kind of same myths and legends you find all around the world, the Great Flood, and then giants showing up. And, you know, in esoteric traditions, Atlantis is considered a reality, and it was actually located from the Canary Islands to the Azores Islands and all the way to Bimini.
And yet, where's the proof?
There is...
About the Bimini Road?
No, I'm saying that there's core samples that were done on the Mid-Atlantic Range in the 70s by Soviet scientists around the Azores, and they revealed rivulets, like the land, even though it was vastly underwater, is was once above water about 15,000 years ago. You know, obviously, that gets dismissed like it's impossible that there was that much plate movement. But once again, you get into these, you know, theories like plate tectonics. And, you know, what I would say when you talk about proof, you talk about sites like Göbekli Tepe or astonishing stonework in Peru and Sacsayhuaman, that they have the similar iconography and engineering styles all around the world. Same iconography, same symbolism. All these creator gods carrying strange man bags around the world, and the religious documents and myths and legends basically talking about these beings showing up and restarting civilization and bringing like advanced geometry to China and the gods in Sumeria, the Anunnaki. You have basically this common thread of advanced geometry, mathematics, and, you know, similar cultural traits. As far as a landmass that's been located in the Atlantic, that hasn't occurred yet. Mm-hmm.
So how can we take this? Why do we pay so much attention to this if there's no evidence to substantiate it except a bunch of myths and urban legends?
Well, I'd say it's woven into a story about the past that it remains in the collective unconscious, and it plays itself out in books and movies and shows like Ancient Aliens. And it just resonates with people, I think, because it's part of the Jungian collective unconscious. And it's, you know, there are two camps that one alternative minded camp is that a lot of these ideas, these general themes are true about the past, human genetic intervention to create Homo sapiens, on and on. Then there's a scientific side, amoeba, to Homo sapiens, to skyscrapers. There's no lost civilization. Everything goes in one direction. There's no cataclysm. So you have competing theories. And I just think, you know, society is fascinated with Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones and Lost Worlds, because I think there is some validity to it. And once again, a lot of the things that were considered heresies have been now proven fact incontrovertibly by science. Like I said, floods and cataclysms.
You know, like, let's talk about the floods. I had an archaeologist on the other night who unequivocally said the flood was localized. It wasn't a worldwide flood. And then when you get a scientist on and a climatologist on, they concur with the archaeologist because it is totally impossible for the water to raise that high around the world. So who does John Q. Public, like me, believe? If you guys in the scientific field and the archaeological field can't get on the same page, what does that tell us about the people that we're supposed to put our trust in when it comes to telling us the truth about the past?
Well, I think it's just, you know, people have agendas. They want certain things to be true, or they, you know, they can bend facts, and they can jump off of theories that really aren't too sound and make these logic bridges that are really far to make them work. But, you know, something like, you know, when I say a great flood, you know, there was a cataclysmic flood in the United States, in North America, no question about it. Did all, you know, around the world, did this occur? No, but Not necessarily, but there's massive flooding that took place 13,000 years ago in one event. It wasn't just localized flooding. There's all kinds of evidence. And I know skeptics and professionals have dragged their feet for a long time about this idea, but there's mounting evidence that it's true. I don't think it's like...
Okay, listen, I've got to take my final break. Please stand by. Exo Nation. Jim Fierro is our special guest. Facebook.com/Giants on Record. And he, along with Hugh Newman, are the authors of Giants on Record. I'll be back on the other side of this break as we wrap up this hour here in the X Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Don't go away. Jim Vieira is our guest this hour, facebook.com/Giants on Record, along with Hugh Newman. Jim has written a book entitled Giants on Record. It's available on Amazon.com. When I was reading your intro, let me just get to the point. Jim has investigated worldwide ancient stone sites, studied global indigenous and oral traditions, religious documents, the readings of the great mystics, and the literature of the secret societies to form an alternative theory regarding the origins of civilization, a theory almost in perfect alignment with the readings of the famed sleeping prophet Edgar Cayce. Now, what were those readings?
Well, Cayce was born in Hopkinsville, Kentucky in 1877, and he had an eighth grade education, but he would go into a trance state and give health readings for people. It came about kind of organically. And doctors and all kinds of professionals started sending him their hopeless patients, mm-hmm. because he had such a good track record. And then Cayce started to talk about lost worlds and Atlantis in his readings while he was talking about previous lifetimes of his patients. So he eventually kicked out 14,000 readings and 25 million words that's housed at the Cayce Library. And Cayce specifically talked about Atlantis and the different destructions, and the last destruction being in, 13,000 years ago. So he gave all these readings about the past, about androgynous creator gods, polydactylism, six fingers and six toes, giants and little people. And they match with pretty much with Plato, with Madame Blavatsky, Rudolf Steiner, the Rosicrucians and Freemasons. They all say the same thing. They all talk about Atlantis existing. They all talk about creator gods, yeah, who are androgynous. So there's all these levels of specificity, and then you find these creator gods that are androgynous all around the planet. They're mm-hmm. carrying like these strange man bags, like in Sumeria or Quetzalcoatl at the Olmec site in La Venta on the other side of the Atlantic. So there's all these levels of specificity aligned with this kind of strange and specific mm-hmm. Iteration of the past.
But no evidence.
Well, I'd say there's...
It's hearsay. It's hearsay. It's a legend. It's a myth. It's a story. It's an oral tradition. That doesn't mean it's real. Plato, how come other philosophers and other people of the time didn't talk about Atlantis? It was only when Plato talked about it that the legend was born.
No, that's not true. Herodotus, who lived before Plato, actually talked about Atlantis specifically mm-hmm. before Plato was even born.
So maybe Aelian,
Theopompus. There's a host of the seven or eight other chroniclers who also talked about Atlantis as well.
But still, no evidence, no proof, hearsay. So why does this, at the end of the day, how does this help mankind or society? How does it feed the hungry? How does it clothe the people who need clothes? How does it, how does it take care of the sick? Why do so many people pay so much attention to these stories?
Well, I'd say that they're a part of humanity's past and that we had, you know, a cataclysm 13,000 years ago. There's no question about that. Uh-huh. And that everything got reset back and we've lost a lot of knowledge. And, you know, the Maya codices were destroyed. We lost the Library of Alexandria, and we wouldn't have this discussion if that was still around, I don't think. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think a lot of people get into these subjects, but it's kind of a way to get into metaphysics and quantum mechanics and spirituality. And with a lot of, like, Edgar Cayce's readings are all about, like, the holographic nature of reality, the Rosicrucians of the Freemasons. You know, it's like you treat others how you want to be treated because it's the unconscious messages you're sending to your own mind. There's a lot of, like, esoteric teachings and the literature of all these entities that are talking about this bizarre story of the past. And it's not about, you know, hypermaterialism. It's about the nature of the soul. Where did the universe originate from? Is it a dreaming delusion we're having here? You know, how do you treat others like you want to be treated?
Oh, yeah, that's in the Bible. That's in the Bible, too. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So that's nothing earth-shaking. And as far as Cayce is concerned, wasn't his one of his predictions about Atlantis that it would rise from the Atlantic in 1960, between 1960 and 1967, and it never did?
Yeah, well, that's when the Bimini Road was found, and the researchers point to that. I would say that Cayce had several predictions about the future that never came to pass, like an Earth a pole shift in 1996, and he himself said the future. It's, you know, I look to his past readings and try to verify them, which a lot of have been verified, like the Nile flowed backwards and the Essenes had women in their ranks. These things he predicted, you know, about the past came true. But into the future, I wouldn't, you know, hold out any hope that anybody can actively, you know, predict the future.
Okay, so if he did not predict the future, how come, once again, there are so many people who take everything he says as the word?
Well, he has a pretty good track record of in the past of telling these different stories of the past that when you go around, you look at evidence, you look at you know, a variety of sources, like he predicted or he talked about. The Americas were populated, you know, 25,000-50,000 years ago, and that was ridiculous way back when, and now it's being verified. You know, first it's the Clovis barrier, now it's more in alignment with Cayce. Cayce predicted or talked about multi-regionalism, and now out of Africa is dead, and all these anthropologists are saying maybe multi-regionalism is how the human race came about. You know, so it's looking at the past through his lens. You know, I don't want to be dogmatic about anything. I do a comparative analysis. I don't make up my own theories. I just try to take all what all these chroniclers and mystics are saying and secret societies and see if there's veracity there. You know, it's not like I have all the answers. I think, you know, looking into the past, I try to bypass the human ego and agenda. And oftentimes, like, mystics or secret orders do a better job than just, you know, some agenda-driven professional.
So would you say that the interest in giants, the interest in the esoteric and mysticism is something that has been personified by the New Age movement, the people looking for answers that they can't get through the established belief systems?
Certainly. And it's become like a new religion on the negative side, like Zachariah Sitchin and the Anunnaki. You have a lot of people really dogmatic about that. But I agree. It's like a faux religion for a lot of New Age seekers, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think at the end of the day, it's for me, you know, it's the nature of the soul. What the hell am I doing renting this body for 70 or 80 years? What's going on in time and space? You know, those are the big questions to be asked. And I just think, you know, we want to know these questions and they don't get answered. They don't get answered by religion, for the most part. Organized religion certainly has never answered them for me. We don't get them. Our government just tells us to go shopping, you know? So it's like, yeah, I think there's a hunger, you know?
What happens? What happens if there is nothing, that this is all some kind of fantasy land that was created and maintained because people just can't accept that we're here today, gone tomorrow, and that's it.
Well, you mean beliefs about the past?
Beliefs about, you know, the esoteric and what the New Agers are trying to get other people to believe in. You know, life after death, communication, and the list goes on and on and on. One thing that I've learned over the years is that when it comes to any of these topics that we discuss here, there's never any proof.
Well, your personal experience is a good indicator. You know, the philosophy I study is like pure non-dualism, and you know, it's taught by Yogananda and Jesus, Buddha, Plato, Lao Tse. You know, it's the idea that basically this is like Plato's cave. It's a dreaming delusion, and this isn't our real state. And you don't fix the world. You kind of awaken from a world that's a freak show, and it just it's like the Gnostics say, it's a false reality that we're trapped here in the Matrix until we awaken from it, not as a separate, like, human stupid body hanging with an angry white guy in a throne in the sky, but like this conscious awareness that is unchangeable and has no time or separation element to it. So, you know, when you say there's no proof for it, it's, you know, the worldly proof, it can prove things with inside the illusion very well. You know, you'll get your answers through experience, I guess. You know, I do like ayahuasca ceremonies with shamans. I'll do anything for a good story and to try to, you know, find the truth. I just, you know, your personal experience is a pretty good indicator. I just advocate.
Well, I don't know if anybody can say they have a personal experience when they are under the influence of a psychedelic or a drug or anything. To me, that's just escaping reality using chemicals.
Well, it's not unicorns and fairies. I find it's like, you know, you face a lot of your demons, you work through a lot of psychological garbage, you step out of your, what it does is it represses your ego, so you kind of see with clarity.
All right, I hate to do this, but we've run out of time for tonight. X-Zone Nation, if you'd like to get more information about Jim Vieira, visit his Facebook page at www.facebook.com. Got that so far? facebook.com/giants_on-record. I'm sorry, X-Zone Nation. I just don't buy it. I want evidence. I want proof. Talk is cheap. Show me the beef. I'll be back on the other side of this break. Don't go away.